Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, and welcome back. So good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In fact, is open innovation is the subject in the second half of the program today, so you're going to want to be sure and stick around for that. In the first interview that we have is Harry Arnold. He's Vice President of Technology for Goodrich Corporation. And we're going to talk to him at his office in Charlotte, North Carolina. When you think of Goodrich, I always thought of BF Goodrich, the tire people, but they haven't done tires now in about 20 years. Goodrich Corporation is a global supplier of systems and services to the aircraft and engine manufacturers, airlines, and defense forces around the world. And then the second half of the program, Rick Mahoney, Vice President of Business Development for the Innovation Access Network, Open Innovation Network, coming along in association with the Massachusetts High Tech Council, as a matter of fact. And the Innovation Access Network, IAN is what it's known, it's part of the science and technology community in defense, homeland security, and markets to foster research and development in technology communications. So that's going to be very, very interesting. You'll really enjoy that. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from someone a lot of us never heard of, visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason.
Stand by.
Oh, good. We have on the phone Harry Arnold. He's Vice President of Technology for the Goodrich Corporation. Harry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
When I was a young man, when I was a boy, my father drove a Packard, and he had BF Goodrich tires on the Packard. But I understand that Goodrich really got totally out of the tire business back in the 80s sometime, and is now doing a whole bunch of other things in the field of defense. Tell us what Goodrich is all about right now.
Yeah, we are certainly not a tire company. If you buy a BF Goodrich tire, you are actually buying a tire made by Michelin. We sold the tire business back in the 80s, as you mentioned, and we also sold the brand name of BF Goodrich, which is obviously had some confusion ever since then. But since we don't do tires, we sold the tire business in order to invest in aerospace. And since the mid-80s, the Goodrich Corporation has been continually adding to its aerospace businesses. And we do everything from MEMS rate gyros that you can hardly see on the tip of your finger up to 13,000-pound landing gear for the A380. And we do everything just about in between. So it's a pretty exciting place, actually.
Well, I'm going to want to ask you about job opportunities in just a minute, but let's cover some of these things that Goodrich does. I understand you do surveillance and reconnaissance systems. Are you part of the drones that we have operating around the world right now?
Yes, we have systems on that. We do autopilots for those vehicles. We also do gimbals that hold some of the optical systems that we build. We do the optics on the U-2, Goodrich. And we do optics that actually go up into space. So our reconnaissance business is a large business, primarily in the Boston area and Danbury area.
Okay, what are some of the real interesting things that you can tell us about the reconnaissance business without violating any top secret stuff that Goodrich is into?
A a lot of what we do I can't talk about. That's absolutely true. My advice to anybody who's outside is be on your best behavior, because somebody can tell who it is. The optics that we have these days are pretty incredible optics, and we've developed not just visible light optics, but also shortwave infrared that can see through haze and fog and at nighttime, and the combination of visual optics with the shortwave infrared optics gives you a lot of information. And the key to the game today is really taking that optical data and turn it into information, because there are, just like on Google and YouTube, there's too much to see, too much to know, and there has to be a way to sort through all that to get the information that you need.
Okay, so when you talk about shortwave infrared, help me get my arms around this. Does it bring back an optical detail that the human eye recognizes, or do you have to take and put this into some sort of a form that will convert it?
No, it brings back a picture that you would recognize. So if, for example, one were on the Golden Gate Bridge and it was a foggy day and you wanted to take a picture of downtown San Francisco, you wouldn't be able to do it with your regular camera. But a shortwave infrared camera would see through the fog and show you the buildings.
What about face recognition and that sort of thing? I mean, could you do that from a distance with shortwave infrared camera?
You can, to a point. Yeah, absolutely. And the combination of both the visual and the infrared is very powerful. As we look at more and more frequencies to gather data, called multi-spectral imaging, that you start getting a lot of different information that's available. And I guess I don't want to dive too much deeper into this, really.
Okay. Dennis Trace has been on this program a number of times. He's head of security at Logan Airport, and he tells about a remarkable camera that he has that at 100 meters can pick out details on a person's lapel pin. Is that one of your products?
I don't know if it's specifically ours, but we could do it.
Okay, so
we can pick out some pretty amazing characteristics from space. So 100 yards is not the challenge.
A lot of detail, you say, from space. We're talking about space satellites can hone in on something of the Earth and pick out some real detail. Can you give us any examples without violating top secrecy?
No.
Okay. All right. That's plain enough.
Yeah.
You're looking for help. I understand. You're having some job fairs and things, and you're looking for people. What kind of people are you looking for?
We're looking for all sorts of engineering people, particularly in electrical, electronics, and power electronics, optical systems, stress analysis, etc. We've talked about ISR, but Goodrich, as I mentioned at the beginning, is a very diverse company, and we do systems from landing gear, wheels and brakes, escape slides, cabin attendant seating, pilot seating, lighting, sensor systems, actuation systems, engine control systems. I can go on and on and on. So we are looking very broadly for engineers, for manufacturing leaders, for supply chain management, program managers, etc. So it's a very diverse corporation, and it's a great corporation because the culture of Goodrich is unique in the aerospace world. I'll put it that way.
So you're looking for all kinds of different people, not just engineers, a lot of engineers. You're interested in engineers, but you're looking for other types of people, too. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, we're looking for supply chain people. Obviously, we have a very large supply chain that needs to be managed. We're looking for program managers. We're looking for international trade specialists. We have a very strong culture of lean and continuous improvement, and we're looking for experts in those areas. We're looking for manufacturing team leaders, commodity managers. We're looking very broadly beyond just the engineering and technical area.
I presume that anyone answering these positions would be moving to Massachusetts, or would it be there to beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina?
It will not be in Charlotte, North Carolina, typically. We are looking across, we are organized in 9 major businesses. So okay. Our aerostructures business is located in Chula Vista, California, southern, just south of San Diego.
Okay.
We are looking for people for that business. That's a business that develops the nacelle system that wraps around the engine. We're looking for people in our engine components business, which would be in West Hartford, Connecticut, Twinsburg, Ohio, Rome, New York. We're looking for people for Phoenix, Arizona, for our interiors business. We're looking for our landing gear business, which is headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio. And then we have very large sensors and integrated systems business that's in Minneapolis, Monterey Park, California, Vergennes, Vermont, and also our wheels and brakes business, which is headquartered in Troy, Ohio.
You are everywhere. You're all over the place. Did you do anything? Do you do anything with the European Union?
Well, yes, we do. We have businesses in Italy, France, and the UK, and Germany. We do a lot with the EU. Our UK businesses are our actuation businesses and electrical generators, electrical systems and motors and motor drive electronics and engine controls. And in France, we have more actuation. We also do assembly work for Airbus down in Toulouse. It's actually Goodrich employees that hang the engine under the wing at the Toulouse production site.
Really?
For Airbus.
Wow.
And we recently acquired an actuation business in northern Italy. And in Germany, we have a lighting business for both external aircraft lights and internal cabin and flight deck lights.
So with these aircraft engines, you don't make the whole engine, but you work in conjunction with like Pratt & Whitney or GE or some of those?
All of them, Pratt, GE, Rolls-Royce. We work very closely with them in developing, as I said, the nacelle. The nacelle system is what you see of an engine. The engine is the fan, and then the internal parts that you don't see. We do everything that wraps around the engine that allows it to be installed on the airplane itself. So our, in I like to tell people here at Goodrich that the nacelle is probably the second most complicated part of an airplane behind the engine itself, in that the nacelle has to be an aerodynamic structure to not increase the drag of the airplane and also to allow the flow into the engine to be smooth. It's a structure that has acoustic lining in it so that we dampen the noise generated. The noise at the tip of a fan blade might be 170 dB, which is the pain threshold is, I don't know exactly, but just over 100 dB, I think, is where it starts hurting your ears.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of acoustics engineering and acoustics manufacturing. There's temperature issues. The exhaust temperature of a modern jet is probably around 1,400 degrees, 1,300, 1,400 degrees that we have to deal with. Very complex structure that that we design and build. And with the new Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan that's going on the C-Series, Bombardier C-Series airplane, we work in conjunction with Pratt to develop a structure that actually moves to allow the fan to retain its stability and to minimize fuel burn throughout the takeoff, climb, and cruise regime. So it's very interesting stuff.
Well, you...
very high tech.
you spent... years with Boeing, I understand. And Boeing, last I had a conversation with them on this program, we're trying to develop a new quieter aircraft. And you touched on that a minute ago, that the noise of the fan blades. What's being done, and what can we expect for quieter quieter jetliners?
Yeah, there's a lot being done on getting noise out. The biggest driver is going to larger diameter fans. I mean, basically, from our high school physics, we remember that force equals mass times acceleration. So if you need 50,000 pounds of thrust, you can either take a little mass and accelerate it a lot, which is what we used to do in the 50s and 60s with engines called low bypass engines, or you can take a lot of air and not accelerate it so much. And that's what we're doing now with these very large fans that put on the front of the engine. They're called high bypass ratio engines because most of the air does not go through the core of the engine, goes around the core. And therefore, we can get the same amount of thrust with a lot less acceleration and therefore a lot less noise. And it also is a lot more efficient. So we take significant steps in reducing fuel burn by going to the high bypass engine. So as we move, as Pratt's doing with the geared turbofan, as they go to larger fans for the 25,000 pound thrust engine, they're going to be quieter. And what we do then is we add our acoustics knowledge, and we actually absorb within the structure, will absorb the noise that's generated by the core of the engine and the fan of the engine. So, for example, on a 787 size engine, we will have over 2 million acoustic holes on the inner liner of the nacelle to absorb the noise.
All right, I can kind of visualize that. I've got another question for you, though. There are some who feel that jet fuel is pretty dirty and about the grade of kerosene. Is there something being done with the new engines that will be burn cleaner?
Yeah, there's a lot being done, both to burn less. I mean, obviously, that's the first step, is let's burn less. And we're working in our engine components business out of Des Moines, Iowa. We're developing fuel nozzles, and with our engine control systems, we're developing, in conjunction with the engine manufacturers, lean burn technologies. What we mean by lean burn is to reduce the NOx and other components that come out the back end of the engine. But the first step is to burn the fuel that you have very efficiently. And engines are getting more and more efficient. But in addition to that, we're working also the industry. We aren't specifically, but the industry is working alternate fuels to develop other sources than oil for the fuel. And that's going quite well. The Air Force is flying airplanes with alternate fuels. We've done some commercial flights with that. So there's a lot of effort being done. The biggest step is fuel efficiency. If you look at since 1958, when the 707 first entered service, to 1998, when a 737-800 entered service, the approximate passenger miles per gallon of fuel has gone from about 25 to about 75.
Wow.
So a huge increase in fuel efficiency over that 40-year period. And if you compare a 777 that entered service in 1994 with what Airbus is going to compete with that will enter service 20 years later, you're seeing another step change in the fuel burn of these airplanes. So the industry, since its inception, has worked to reduce fuel burn because that's the competitive advantage that a Boeing or an Airbus brings to the marketplace, is lower operating costs. And the number one driver of operating costs is fuel burn.
We interviewed an engineer from your old company, Boeing, about 6-8 months ago, talking about the work they're doing on a jetliner that would take off and land normally with the current burning of the fuels, but once airborne, sustain on batteries. I don't know if you know anything about that or if you have feelings in that direction, but how involved would Goodrich be in a program like that?
We would get involved with that. We do electrical power systems. We do motor drive electronics. We do motors. So if you're going to sustain flight with a battery, you're going to need an electric motor that can turn that fan.
Harry, what have we missed? What do we need to touch on that me, with my limited knowledge of what Goodrich is doing, have neglected to ask you?
Well, we do a lot in sensors. We're trying to push sensor technology to much higher temperatures where we can better monitor what's going on in engines and control them more effectively and more efficiently. As I mentioned, we do escape slides, and we do cabin attendants. We do ejection seats. We're one of two manufacturers in the world that make ejection seats for jet aircraft, and we actually have a sled system out in Utah that can go 600 miles an hour down the rails, and we test ejection seats. It's a pretty complex component to get pilots out of airplanes safely. We do landing gear, as I mentioned. Landing gear is a big structure. As I mentioned, the main landing gear on an A380 weighs 13,000 pounds, and the steel we use in landing gear, a 2x4 section of steel in landing gear could hold up 2.2 million pounds. Think about that. So if you could balance an A380 and a 747 on a 2x4 of the steel we use. We're trying to move to other materials. We use a lot of titanium. It's expensive. We're spending a lot of time developing with our supply base what we call additive manufacturing rather than subtractive manufacturing. You may have seen some of the pictures of people, quote, growing bicycles. And all of that is possible, where we use lasers and powdered material to build the net shape right from the CATIA drawing, rather than getting a big forging and machining it to shape. Some real interesting stuff going on there. We are at the forefront of...
Okay, I need you to hold that thought for a minute while we take a break and be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Yes, it's Teddy Roosevelt. Ask peace in the name of justice, and not from any weakness.